I heard them announce, we need referees. If you know the rules, you can be a referee. I'm like, well, I just read the rules 2 weeks ago. Now, this was the only sport, I've played every sport in the world, except for cricket, and I've never read a rule book in my life. So I followed one guy for a game to 21, and I was a referee. That was all the training I ever did. It doesn't happen like that anymore.
Welcome back to the Future of Pickleball. I'm your host, Paul Olson. We're on the Selkirk TV channel, and we're also available on YouTube. Just look up the Future of Pickleball and go to the list of shows that are available there. Thanks. We're going to have a guest today that's really kind of a cool perspective. I think Ron has been around pickleball almost as long as anybody on earth. But in addition to that, I want to say, as we start off here, if you're noticing here, we really didn't coordinate our uniforms today. We were both being very busy being, cleaned up for the show. But I like your shirt, Ron, anyhow.
I like your shirt, too.
Good. Well, I want to introduce Ron Ponder. Ron has been in pickleball for a long time, and he has been deeply, deeply involved in refereeing, referee teaching, training, and certifying, and now around the world. And we're going to talk about all of it. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
You know, I want to start off first. I know you're one of the most senior referees in the sport of pickleball. Give us just a brief idea what your background was coming into the sport of pickleball, but then how you got so deeply involved in refereeing.
So, like anyone else, someone invited me to play. I said, sure, I have no idea what that is, but okay. And this was at a summer house I've got in Galveston, Texas. Went down there and played down there. Went back 6 months later and realized I could play again. So I did. 6 months later, I realized I want to go down there and play that thing. And at that point, I thought, I'll check in Oklahoma City and see if we have a club. Probably not, since I've never heard of it. No one else probably has. And turned out we had a club with 400 members. We now have a club with 2,700 members. So good. I went over to Europe, got roped into playing in a tournament in Madrid after I'd been playing steadily for 3 weeks. And it turned out to be the last tournament that the pro tour at that time was in. So I met a lot of pros. I met a lot of leaders of pickleball, but I didn't know that because I didn't know anyone. So I had a great time at this tournament, came back to the States, played in a tournament. You know, I was so excited. I looked up and I found a tournament, and I could only play singles in this tournament because I didn't have a partner. I went down. I won 4 points. I drove all the way to Georgia. I won 4 points in this tournament. And as I walked out to my car, I heard them announce, we need referees. If you know the rules, you can be a referee. So I'm like, well, I just read the rules 2 weeks ago. Now, this was the only sport, I've played every sport in the world, except for cricket. And I've never read a rule book in my life. So I'm one of the few people playing pickleball that had read the rule book. And so I went back. I followed one guy for a game to 21, and I was a referee. That was all the training I ever did. It doesn't happen like that anymore.
Right. We're going to cover that.
I was, a, I was a one-off. Yeah.
And so then when you, so you went through this and your experience, like so many people getting into the sport, you know, it frankly has been pretty predictable. But given that, when you got into refereeing, you started to actually get deeply involved with it. You know, first of all, kind of give me, I want to make sure we know your title correctly. What is your actual title role that you're involved with in pickleball currently?
Well, I'm a certified referee with USAP, and I've got a title with the Global Pickleball Federation that I don't even remember what it is. Director of Officiating will cover it.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect.
It's committee chair of officiating or something like that. So Director of Officiating, Global Pickleball Federation.
So in that, from the time that you're describing, because I had similar experience back in the day with, hey, we need a referee, and I didn't have my own paper clip or my own laundry clip, but somebody would loan me a laundry clip so that I could do that. And those of us that have been around a while know what that means. We don't have to get into it. But from that to today, because the sport has become quite sophisticated on the refereeing side. At some point you had to say, you know what, I'm going to devote some time and energy to doing this the right way and be part of having it done correctly. What was that process?
Right. So I live in Oklahoma, not a whole lot of sanctioned tournaments near me to practice my refereeing skills. So, but after about a year, I had been to maybe a couple of tournaments. I had probably reffed 35, 40 matches, something like that. And I heard about this certified referee program and how hard it was to qualify as a certified referee. At the time, 70% of applicants were failing the certified referee exam, evaluation. And so that sounded like a challenge to me, you know, it can't be that hard. I can do it. And, you know, it's one of those things where you study some, you're confident, and sometimes it's all about getting lucky with the matches that you referee as a part of the evaluation. You referee three evaluations, and if you become a certified ref, you didn't just luck into it. You might have gotten lucky on the matches that you did, but you know what you're doing. Otherwise, you're going to fail. It's a very tough evaluation. Now, the system that we have now, everything's flipped, and it's somewhere around 70% pass the certified. Having said that, a lot of people don't go for it because it is a very onerous process. You know, we want to know when you put on your certified referee credentials, it's important that players know that you know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Crucial.
You know, it is on that order, and God knows I've been involved in a lot of tournaments, and for the most part, all very accomplished referees. I've had a couple of pretty novice people that, But I've told people that really the novice piece of it is not that big a hurdle in the fact that most of the time I always found that we were pretty accommodating and, you know, with the referee and, oh, you know, gee, right. We got our score inverted or something, because I'm a big fan and I promote the idea to people all the time to get into refereeing. That it's such a cool way if you can do it. I mean, how many times have you been on a center court with some of the greatest players in the world? And you're as big a part of the event as they are on the sidelines. Isn't that true?
That's true. I don't want to be. I want to just be a scorekeeper. I don't want people to remember my name when I leave the court. But, you know, sometimes that happens. Sometimes you get into a situation and that happens. You also become known to the players as someone that when they step on the court, they know that the match is going to be managed properly, I guess. would be the way I would put it. They know you're going to be fair to them. I do not have a monkey in this circus. I don't care who wins. Here we go, guys. 0-0-2.
Yeah, so. And that's such a I think a consistent story amongst all sports. Any athlete that plays at a high level, they all want to know what the ground rules are that they're going into, and a strong, demonstrative, commanding umpire referee really sets that tone, and everything generally works very smoothly as a result of that. It is the thing that I think about with you, and I've been seeing you at events for years and years and years now. One of the things that I've looked forward to in this interview is talking to you, because you have this unique vision of standing directly on the court and seeing what the results are of all of the rule changes, equipment standard changes. You actually see this stuff very close up, and I want to talk about that a little bit. As you're starting to see what's developing in the sport, let's take, for example, the idea of the rules that USA Pickleball has pretty much established that are the world's rules. How do you think that process goes in terms of rule changes and adjustments from a referee's perspective?
So I am a member of the USAP Rules Committee, and it is there's a very laid out process. Right now, the rule change proposal portal is open at rules.usapickleball.org, I think. Any USAP member can submit a rule change proposal. Here's what I think the rule should be. Here's what it is now. Here's why I think it should be changed. And we will, the Rules Committee, when the portal shuts down in June, I believe, we will go over every single one of those proposals. Now, some of them don't take very long to consider. I think there should be overhead serves in pickleball. Okay, let's consider that. No. But a lot of them, and some of them are grammatical things. You used a past tense here and it should be present tense. Oh, okay. Yes, we need to change that. But then some of them are consequential, and we spend an inordinate amount of time concentrating on getting it right, writing the rules correctly. Writing a rule is interesting because you've got to say exactly what you mean to say and nothing that you don't mean to say, so that there's not a loophole. We created a loophole several years ago that allowed the chainsaw serve. We didn't think of it. And the following year, we corrected it some. And the following year, we corrected it some more. So people say, oh, gosh, you change rules so often. Well, we change them once a year. So the Rules Committee votes. And then all of those rule change proposals go to the USAP board, and they look at it. They look at each one, and they usually follow the Rules Committee recommendations or vote, because we're all referees and we, have an understanding of what will happen if we do or if we don't or whatever. It's incredibly important.
That's a real natural segue for me. One of the things that I've been interested to hear your thoughts and ideas, because you're deeply involved with USA Pickleball, you're deeply involved in the actual experience of refereeing. What is your take on some of the controversy that's been going on, let's say in the last year, involving USAP? How do you think that thing is worked out, and how fairly do you think it's addressed?
Are we talking about paddle testing or?
Well, let's go to, I'm kind of
in specific.
I guess the idea is that on a lot of the podcasts, I hear criticism of USA Pickleball. I hear that the UPA they've got a different perspective on things. And then there gets into some finger pointing. But as somebody who's been involved in the sport for a long time, what is your take on that generally?
So I've been a member of USAP from the very start. I have USAP has made missteps, and I'll be the first to admit it, and I'm sure that USAP would also, and understand that I'm not a spokesman for USAP. They probably would not want that. I don't know. But having said that, I've also never worked with a more dedicated group of individuals who are trying to grow the sport at the grassroots level. We've got, 2,200 ambassadors around the US and Canada, growing the sport. And I'm an ambassador also, and I really feel that the ambassador program is what has really expanded the pool of players. COVID helped, ironically, but USAP is doing everything they can to grow the sport at the grassroots level. Now, UPA is the governing body for PPA and MLP. I used to be a referee for MLP, so I've got some loyalty there. I reffed every single tournament of the PPA for the first couple of years, so I've got some loyalty there. Don Stanley is one of my best friends. But UPA is a governing body for a professional sports, a professional pickleball tour, I guess is how you would say it. They are interested in growing the sport only as far possibly as they can make money off it. Profit is not a four-letter word, and I have no problem with that. UPA is a nonprofit, I'm sure. PPA and MLP are obviously trying to be profitable. And so we both are working toward the same thing with differences.
As I talk to you, and I'm not really expecting you to be the spokesman for anybody other than Ron Ponder, but in reality, you've had such a unique experience that really filters into that you began to raise the subject of my next question, and that was, you of all people have seen everything from start to finish on the acceleration of pickleball paddles. You may not be deeply involved in all of the paddle testing and all of those things, but how has that demonstrated itself on the court itself? Do you think paddle speed, paddle face speed is a factor when you see it in games that you're refereeing on the court and how it affects the game?
So to go back a little while, I was a director of ambassadors for the IFP, the International Federation of Pickleball. We asked the past president of the racquetball governing body why racquetball had never made it into the Olympics. And what they told us was that they had allowed the manufacturers to kind of take over the specifications for rackets, and the sport became too fast for the casual player. Okay. You don't hear about anyone nowadays taking up racquetball. There are still hardcore guys who play it and probably will until they discover pickleball. But it died out because the sport became too fast. When this little hard rubber ball is reaching 145 miles an hour inside an enclosed space, people are going to stop playing. So the first time I saw a hot paddle, as we would call it, I was preparing my paperwork for a match. I hear this weird sound, and I look up, and a ball crosses my field of vision faster than anything I had ever seen. And it was a player, female player, looks over at me and shakes her head and goes, "Yep, that's my new paddle." It was a ProConnex Black Ace, which is one of the delisted paddles now. So the paddles, I mean, I can see the difference in the speed. So it's not a mile per hour faster. It's demonstrably faster And when pro players tell me that when they get into a hand fight at the no volley zone and they're not quick enough to react to that, that tells me that it's too hot. Now, interestingly, USAP has this policy that if we delist a paddle, it's over an 18-month period to allow the manufacturer to sell out their inventory. In this case, it was 7 months, I believe. And I think that's because the manufacturers agree that the paddles are too hot. And, you know, they want the best thing for pickleball also. They want to be able to continue selling paddles to new players. And if it becomes dangerous, there's not going to be new players. Pure and simple.
You know, it's so interesting. One of the benchmarks that I look at, both in playing myself, though I'm not a kid anymore, but and watching even up through the pro level, is the body bag count. So it used to be, up until a year ago, that, you know, somebody getting hit by a ball from their opponent was a very rare thing. And now we're starting to talk about, even at a pro level, having players talking about, I was hit 4 or 5 times in a game. And they've got wicked reflexes. That, to me, is the piece that, like you say, I've seen get a little bit out of control. The other thing that I want to kind of talk to you about, because you're deeply involved in it, is we go through some controversy in the sport about line calls. And why don't you first describe what the actual responsibility for a referee is in line calls and how you see it working itself out?
So this is one of the interesting parts of a player becoming a referee. They will learn why the referee oftentimes doesn't overturn line calls. Okay. First off, we have 11 responsibilities, a referee, and number 10 on that list is assisting with line calls. It is a low, low responsibility. One of the problems with it is that our main responsibility, other than calling the score and administering the rules properly, is watching the no volley zone, because no one watches the no volley zone other than the referee. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the referee's not there, no one's going to call a fault unless you just actually fall inside the no volley zone. So that's our responsibility. Now, if I'm looking at your feet, which I'm doing, and I expect you to hit the ball and you don't hit the ball, but because you think it's going to go wide, you call it out. I've looked at your feet and then realized that you didn't hit the ball. And now I've got to try and catch up. Now, I might see the ball land, but did I see it clearly? And sure, to overturn a call, I've got to see it clearly. I'll tell you that 80% of the time when the ball lands and it's called in or out, you know, out because there's not an in call, I agree that it probably was. I thought it was. When a ball lands, I think to myself, that ball was in, or that ball was out, or, oh my gosh, I hope they don't ask me about that one. So if I clearly saw it out, then, ref, did you see it? Yes, that ball was out. Ref, did you see that? Not clearly, by rule, the call stands.
Right.
And a player has a bias. This person wants to see it out. This person wants to see it in. And that bias actually affects how they see it. I've had players call balls that were 4 inches in, you know, just absolutely no doubt. I'll guarantee you they thought the ball was out. Now, once again, I don't have a monkey in the circus. I'm going to call what I see. I don't care who wins. If I saw it clearly, I'll tell you what I saw.
Yeah, you know, so interesting.
I can't think quickly enough to call something other than what I saw. So
I want to take a quick moment to tell you about something new in pickleball. We have all been ghosted in the pickleball group chat. Now here's a way to fix that. Get the Play More Pickleball app. We're trying to get some pickleball in, so you send out a message to the group. A few people like the message. But what does that mean? Will they actually show up? And what kind of players are they? Will you have enough people for doubles? Playmore is the new pickleball app that does the frustrating part for you. It will send smart invitations to play. You can easily see who's RSVP'd, and then you can use the AI matchmaking tool to balance your games. That means no more 5-0 versus 3-0 matchups. The best part, it's free. Find it in the App Store or use the web version at getplaymore.com. Playmore is the most stress-free scheduling app in pickleball. Now, let's get back to the show. In the early days, before I started traveling the country nationally in the pickleball space, I ran a pickleball facility in Minnesota. And a good deal of what our intro to pickleball was about was showing people how fine that difference between an in-ball and an out-ball is on a round, non-compressing ball.
Yeah.
And asking somebody, and I would just place a ball, and they wouldn't tell them whether it was on the line or off, but then ask them to move around to several different spots on the court until they were looking straight down the line. And that's a finite difference,
yeah.
Which leads me then to...
And then do that with the ball traveling at 45 miles an hour.
And your body moving and running. Yeah.
And you're trying to hit the ball. Yeah.
Yeah. So now that leads then to the question of what are your thoughts about line judges in pickleball?
My experience with line judges is that a 25-year-old pro's eyesight and judgment is better than a 60 or 70-year, in my case, eyesight. Not eyesight, but just seeing the ball land. I remember it in the very first year of the PPA at the Nationals in Las Vegas, Simone Jardine came up with this idea of a line judges who only were there to answer appeals. So Jeff Warnick slams the ball. I was the baseline judge. The ball lands, and I think, oh my gosh, I don't know what that was. And I know they're going to ask me because I couldn't tell. Both Simone and Ben Johns clapped the shot and off we went. They saw it in. I had no idea what it was. So not just me, but line judges is a hard job.
Yeah.
It's a hard job. We will get to the point, I think, where AI, Kostolenko has a wonderful line judging camera and AI, and his stuff is amazing. Boxcar Productions, I think it's another company that he has, but AI will be the future for pickleball.
Cool. Yeah, that's interesting to say. I remember being at I think it actually was the US Open, and I was line judging and I was doing the baseline, and I didn't like doing it after the first time I did because I felt so important. It was so important that I look and watch the baseline so closely that I wasn't really able to watch the match very well. And I would wonder if that doesn't kind of become a distraction. We just recently, and this has never come up to my knowledge before in pickleball, but we just had an Orlando pro event with an orange court and quite a bit of controversy. Any thoughts or ideas on your end of having been on a lot of different courts with different colors?
Well, The few clips that I've watched of that event, I had my sunglasses on because that was pretty bright orange. Now, understand that MLP is an entertainment tour. They want to bring viewers in. They want to generate a sense of team. So the Orlando Squeeze, their colors are orange and blue, and that's what they were allowed to paint the court. I have no problem with that. You know, it was really bright, but you could play the ball. You know, now if the no volley zone was yellow, that would have been a concern. But other than that, whatever MLP does to build their viewership, you know, that's fine.
Cool. You know,
I'm not sure that color scheme built their viewership, but
well,
but they're, it, They're working on it.
Yeah, and it was the first time that we've really had a, you know, a color issue come up that it was enough of a topic of conversation amongst the pros and the podcasters after the event that it was different. You know, I've always approached sports where we're both on the same, both myself and my opponent are on the same field, on the same, we're all dealing with the same things. Sometimes lighting isn't perfect, sometimes wind isn't perfect, but at the end of the day, we're both playing with the same conditions, and you just sort
you
deal with it.
You know, in Grand Junction, Colorado, they have a sign that says you can either practice your shots or practice your excuses.
Oh, so, very nice. Yeah. Very nice. Yeah, no, that's a good one. I want to talk a little bit with you about what you're doing on the international scene for the GPF, the Global Pickleball Federation, and you've now been traveling the world. Tell us about that a little bit.
So I am the director of officiating for the Global Pickleball Federation. I don't know why I keep saying association. I've never said that before, but GPF. And so I see my position as being making sure that everyone around the world, all the referees around the world, are doing it exactly the same way. Our mission, the GPF mission, is to get us into the Olympics. And when we get there, it would behoove us to have referees from around the world, as opposed to here's the referees and they're all from North America. That would be a bad optic. So, you know, I traveled last year to Poland, England, Ghana, Egypt, Madagascar, China, Peru, all doing pickleball clinics, referee clinics, and working on that. So,
Now I want you to expand on that a little bit. So you head off to these countries, kind of an amazing travel opportunity for a guy. You must like to travel, but describe to us a little bit about what you're able to do with the people that are coming forward in Ghana, as an example, or in England or wherever, who want to say, oh no, we want to get up to speed with refereeing. How does that go?
So I usually go in and I do a 2-day clinic. Ghana had actually had someone come over the previous year. They had 14 trainees. And I worked with them. So I trained under one guy for one game. That's not the way it works. I can't explain what happened to me, but generally we would teach someone, a week later, we would want to go back and correct all the things that they're already doing wrong. So these guys had a year to practice doing it, you know, some things incorrectly. So I was able to go in and get them on board pretty quickly. So by the end of the tournament, we had 5 or 6 guys that I would have put pretty much on any match, you know, short of a pro match. And that's pretty much how it works. Now, I've discovered that this system, because I didn't go back to Ghana a week later to see, I don't know what they're doing wrong now, but I've discovered that that system really isn't economical as far as bringing people up to speed. So we're working on ideas for Zoom calls, WhatsApp meetings where they can ask questions any time of the day or night. I answer questions from around the world every day already. So, and I think, you know, we will get there, hopefully by the time we get to the Olympics.
You know, it is interesting because as you're describing that, I think back to, and all my refereeing was on a very limited basis quite a few years ago when it was pretty primitive in those days. Right. But I do remember after I had probably 12 or 15 matches that I had refereed, when I did get some coaching from some of the people that were traveling the country at that time, they were able to add adjustments and tweaks to what I was doing. And the fact that I was relatively experienced made the whole learning curve pretty quick in the statement that I could understand why they were guiding me to make the change in the adjustment. So that makes sense. You know, something just last week, I had four of the major coaching, teaching, certification organizations for GPF, or they've just recently been endorsed by GPF.
Right.
And I had them on, and there were some really interesting perspectives in that show about how much they thought that unification of the game around the world required things like predictable coaching and training, predictable refereeing. Do you see that the same way from the ref standpoint?
Absolutely. So with the GPF, we have 65 member countries. There are areas of the world where we don't have the number of players, of member countries that we would like, but we are in association with USAP, which is a member country of the Pickleball Federation of Americas, which is an governing body under the GPF. We're working to train referees in those non-member countries so that when they become member countries, they've learned the right way to do it, or our way of doing it. That is really the only way to ref. So, because we know eventually they will join us, and we don't want them to have to learn everything new.
Now, and I think that's really interesting. When I look at kind of the overall landscape of pickleball, the idea of it always seems to be the more uniform we are as a game and as a sport and as rules and as refereeing, where almost anywhere you would go, you're having a similar game experience. That to me is what has made the other major sports of the world what they are, like tennis, like badminton, like cricket, any of them, is they have a global governing body that establishes and sets the rules and standards from one end of the country, or from one end of the world to the other. And that's where I'm really looking forward to the GPF being able to bring that synergy to the world. You know, that being said, in all of your travels, what have been the hottest, coolest, most happening pickleball countries that you've attended?
I would say, first off, I love playing anywhere in the United States, and I'm sure I would enjoy it in Canada also. I road trip to virtually every tournament I go to, and my road trip is based upon where can I find open play on the way. So there's that. Beyond that, England is amazing because they're so dedicated on improving. You know, Madagascar was a lot of fun. Vietnam is just blowing up. They're building venues all over the place in Vietnam. When Asia, it's starting in Asia, but when it really grabs hold, I think we will hear it. It'll be like this distant thunder rumble in the background, and someone will go, "What was that?" And it'll be like Asia discovering pickleball. There's no, I tell people, I think within 5 years, it'll be the most participated sport in the world above everything, because I can't picture it not. You know, what other sport can four generations play together and have a good time? That just doesn't exist.
So now my next question is, what's been the most surprising place that you've been and seen pickleball that caught you off guard as to what they were doing?
I would probably have to say Madagascar. I was invited to come down and referee their national tournament. I kept asking the gentleman how many people are playing in this national tournament, you know, just so I could not judge whether I wanted to go or not, but just to get an idea, you know, are there going to be 500 people? I don't know what the sport is doing in Madagascar. So finally I told him, you know, I was in Egypt already. And I said, you know, I just don't think I'm going to be able to make it down there. It's, you know, there's a lot of travel involved in getting to where I was going. And he said, "Oh, I've told everyone you're going to be here, so I'll lose a lot of face." Well, I don't want anyone to lose face at my expense. So I'm like, okay, I'll come. So I went. When I arrived, it was a nice venue. They had one court. It was a tennis court that they've marked off for a pickleball court. So we're using the tennis net. We're pulling it down to the proper height, but there's no ATPs. And they're really playing it more like tennis. So I said, all right, I spent 3 days teaching them to play. And then we had the national tournament, which had 15 players in it. But they were all great. They had four paddles and they were passing these. When those four came off the court, the next four took those paddles and there they go. There were, most of them were younger, you know, 13 to 16, something like that. We had an 8-year-old. We had a 75-year-old gentleman. They loved it to death. They were extremely excited about it. And every single day, those people were out there from 8 o'clock in the morning until after dark. So that was an amazing experience. I really, really enjoyed it.
So now the last of my questions about your travels is really, with everything that you've seen happening around the world, you make the comment that I'm really appreciative of how big the participation worldwide in this game can become. Where do you think we'll see the ultimate hotspot in pickleball worldwide?
It's got to be Asia, just from a couple of different things. Infrastructure, they're very big in badminton, and badminton just happens to be the exact same size because of where pickleball originated from. And then just their culture of racket sports. That'll be it. And it will be huge. There's absolutely no denying it. And they'll be the best in the world.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
You know, it is interesting. Yeah. I had a man named Pran Kohli on my show from India.
Yeah.
And Pran made the case. He said, if you think you've seen quickness and fastness in the game, athlete wise, he said, wait till you see X serious badminton players. He said, you'll see footwork like you've never seen before. And that really struck
me.
That's a cool thing to think.
And they've got that wrist flick thing going on. It'll be amazing. Interestingly, I saw four badminton guys play pickleball for the first time with really no instruction. The ball never hit the ground. So
that was
interesting.
That is so true. You know, something that I think is really important in the game, and I've kind of taken on a passion project for myself, and that is trying to do everything that I can to help guide and steer the sport to global unification, to the fact that we need a governing body that actually parallels us with the other major sports because we're a global and unified. Guide me what your thoughts are on that.
Okay, so to get into the Olympics, the IOC requires that there be one international governing body. There's some other things, but that right now is the holdup for pickleball. We have three governing bodies, possibly two. The other two talk about combining, but I don't know that they've actually done it. So you've got three. You've got the world, the global, and the international pickleball federations. The Global Pickleball Federation, which I belong to, has the U.S. and Canada, Australia, parts of India. And there's just no way that the IOC is going to accept an international governing body that does not have the U.S. and Canada in particular. We have 140,000 paid members, and there are no other paid members anywhere else in the world. I'm not sure about Australia. I don't want to say they don't, but we've got 140,000 paid members in these two countries. If you're a if you're putting yourself out there as an international governing body and you don't have these two organizations, you're not the one that's going to get accepted into the IOC. It's just not going to happen. So at that point, you have to wonder why they haven't joined us. We have made every overture in the world. And now they would tell you something different. But I get this from my people. I get it from all of the people in Global Pickleball Federation, people who I trust. And, you know, it's just crazy that that's the thing that's holding us back. It's ego as much as anything else. They may say it's democratic votes, or they may say it's something else, but it's ego.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I've been pretty deeply involved in reporting on how these different things go. I've had a number of different leaders from the different organizations on, and it really seems to me personally that we've arrived at the point that it's time to either be part of the solution or be part of the problem, that there really isn't no other way. If it isn't about ego, what could any organization do at this point more than the GPF has been able to do with very limited resources? But the talent pool that they've got has just been amazing to me. I was at an event, you were there as well, at Nationals when they had, I think, 18 countries leaders fly into Arizona for that. And that was kind of a turning point for me, where I saw everything that I could see that they were actually doing, as opposed to talking about or those kind of things. I want to give you a suggestion or an idea that I've got. We've all talked about the Olympics and how important unification is for that. That's fine. I believe that the single biggest moment we'll ever have in pickleball will be when we as a sport can say we have achieved global governance. We are no different than tennis, than rugby, than soccer, than badminton, than table tennis. We are now a global sport, and it's demonstrated in the fact that we have a global organization that has brought together and unified the coaching, teaching certification, the refereeing, the understanding of the game. And I think that that will make the largest PR moment, public relations moment that we've ever had, that we're as real and authentic as all of these other sports in the world. Am I going over the top?
No, I don't think you are. And the important thing for these other entities to consider is that if they join us, they can be a part of the solution. They get to help direct where we go. Now, some of them, and I get this, some of them say that the USAP controls the GPF. USAP does not control the GPF. I think of myself as more of a GPF person than a USAP person at this point. Now, did USAP provide a lot of the early money? Yes. Did the lawyer for the USAP write up our bylaws? Yes. You know, there's a lot of things. I mean, you can't disregard an organization with 70,000 paid members who are trying to do their best to help us get along. As time goes by, the USAP will slide more into a member country position, just like Canada, Australia, Guam, Peru, and everything. You know, they'll always be influential just because of the history. They should be, but they are certainly not directing us.
You know, you earlier in the conversation, you'd talked about the width and breadth of USA Pickleball and what they've done in their 2,200 ambassadors. I think you used that number. You know, one of the things that I've found myself talking with people, as I've talked with a number of them from around the world that have different opinions, and generally there's a lot of, well, what the other guys, what I don't know about the other guys is the conversation. And I say, well, tell me what your plan is and how will you execute it? How will you lead the world in pickleball? And that seems to be kind of a tough question for people to answer because they just don't have the bandwidth. The fact that this game was invented here and now for 20 years, it's been just growing and growing and growing organically. Seems to me that it's time that the rest of the world just has the opportunity to have the same experience that we've had in America. And it's all based on a game that has some very unique characteristics that caused it to grow, not because some media company decided they wanted to get behind it or something. It's the organic growth of the game. And that's what I hope to see happen internationally.
Yes. Well, you know, at Los Angeles, one of the new sports is flag football, entirely pushed by the NFL because they want NFL, American football, to spread around the world. Pickleball is growing because it's social, it's easy to learn, it's hard to master. Four generations can play. You'll be laughing within 5 minutes of getting on the court, or you'll be frustrated, but either way, you'll be hooked. And I tell people, my elevator sales pitch is, it's a cross between tennis and ping pong and crack cocaine. So it's that addictive. I got hit by a car in Naples, Florida, a couple of years ago. As I flew up and was getting ready to land on the car, actually, I landed on the car. As I was sliding off the car onto the concrete, I thought, I hope this doesn't affect my pickleball game tomorrow. So that's either a sickness or an addiction. Yeah. So, and I see that, you know, growing around the world. There's no reason why anyone wouldn't love this sport.
Now, I'll tell you, if you're watching this show and this interview with Ron Ponder and you like what you're seeing, hit the like button, subscribe, and I'll tell you what, watch on your phone, download the Selkirk TV app. It's a free app. It is just amazing, the content that's on Selkirk TV. Ron, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. You've been exactly the amount of real information that I was looking for. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me, Paul.